This is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
Treasure Island may seem a long way from the quiet clinical order of a doctor's waiting room, but this evening I want to tell you about a man whose career spanned both the world of medicine and the life of a buccaneer. The amazing Dr. Dover.
Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step, with the doctors who were there. Medical File.
Before we actually meet Dr. Dover, we must take a look at the state of medicine during the 18th century. And a very good example of the terrifying state of affairs could be found at Versailles. Although this was the palace of Louis XIV, illness and death were a constant reality. The hazards to human life in those days were childbirth for women, battle for men, babyhood, and smallpox for everybody. Smallpox patients were regularly bled, and generally, they died. Infant mortality was appalling.
Well, you've seen the child. What is your opinion?
Your Majesty, your son is very ill.
I can see that for myself. My wife has borne 7 children. Only 2 are still alive. I know when a child is ill. What I want to know is, can you save him?
Sire, the flux will drain him unless we stop it.
How?
It does not respond to normal methods of bleeding and purging. And so, with your permission, I'd like to try something new.
The child will die if you don't try this new method?
Yes, sire.
Very well. Try it. Try anything but save my son.
And so, with grave misgivings, the Swiss physician Helvetius tried his new cure. It worked. The child's dysentery was halted, and Louis XIV was overjoyed.
Helvetius, your cure, it worked!
Yes, sire.
Name anything, anything, and you shall have it.
I'll leave that to you, sire. Revolve me in the way you think best.
Very well, I shall. There's something else I want to know. What was in that cure you gave my son?
I'm afraid that is a secret, sire.
Is it? Well, it cannot remain a secret. Helvetius, I will double your reward if you will tell me what was in that potion.
Sire, we doctors prefer to keep our remedies secret.
Don't argue with me, Helvetius. I want to know what was in that remedy, and I will know. Every doctor must be able to use it.
Very well, sire. The main ingredients, the one which cured your son, is Ipecacuanha.
Strange name. What is it?
A medicine which comes from South America. Apparently the Indians of Brazil use it to cure stomach ailments. It is new to Europe.
Ipecacuanha. Gracious, you and your cure shall be made famous.
So King Louis paid Helvetius a vast sum of money for his secret remedy and made it generally known. However, the use doctors made of the new drug was a poor acknowledgement of the king's generosity. It was regarded as a cure-all and prescribed for complaints for which it had no value. It was given in excess, on the principle that if a medicine was good in a certain quantity, it must be twice as good, given twice the amount, and then produced serious effects. And so the drug became unpopular with responsible physicians. My story now moves to London, where, during the second half of the 18th century, there was practicing a remarkable physician. His name was Thomas Sydenham. At the time when we first meet him, he had 2 students, Hans Sloane and Thomas Dover.
No, you two. You, Thomas, and you, Hans, have asked to be allowed to study with me. Well, I accept you as my students, and I will teach you what I know. But there are one or two things that you must understand before we begin.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir?
Our knowledge of disease is pitifully small. We work in the midst of a morass of fear and misunderstanding. People often believe that we are more like magicians who can work a miracle than men of science. Gentlemen, we can work no miracles, and we must never promise them to our patients. Neither must we be hasty in our diagnosis or our treatment. I say to you, gentlemen, that there is only one way of determining the patient's disease, and that is by a careful and detailed study of the symptoms. You examine thoroughly, watch carefully, and keep meticulous notes of what you see.
Yes, sir.
And make sure that you record neither more nor less than you observe.
But when we've recorded the symptoms, sir, what about treatments?
That's very simple. My advice to you, in fact, to any student, is to interfere as little as possible with nature. She is a remarkable healer, young Thomas. You will find that she can work miracles, and often does, if she is given the opportunity.
Isn't there anything the doctor can do?
Well, good tried remedies are few. No, as long as you are with me, you will use only quinine for the fever, mercury for the pox, give iron to those who are pale and losing blood, and opium to ease pain and restlessness. Otherwise, you will allow your patients to rest, see that they have good nourishing food, and ease their discomfort rather than add to it, as some of my brother physicians seem to delight in doing.
Thomas Sydenham was truly an outstanding man of medicine, when you consider the age in which he lived. A time when a man who'd suffered the torments of a stomach operation could be bled four times in the following 24 hours. As I said, Thomas Sydenham was considered most unusual, but he passed his teaching on to his two students. Time passed, and Sloane and Dover began to treat their own cases and make their own discoveries.
I was reading a medical treatise the other day from France.
Yes?
Yes, and I think we may have another cure we can add to our list.
Oh? What's that?
It was used on the Dauphin. It's called Ipecacuanha. It comes from South America.
You're going to try it?
I already have.
Without permission?
Well, I wanted to see what would happen, if it was really any use.
What is all this? If what is of any use?
Thomas has been experimenting.
Really? On his own patients or mine?
Mine.
Oh, good. Well, what have you been trying?
I read about a new medicine. Apparently, they tried it in France. It cured the Dauphin.
So everyone thinks it's a miracle and they begin using it for everything.
How did you guess?
Well, I know the pattern. Well, what did you use it for?
In the paper, it said that a certain man, Helvetius, had administered it to cure the flux. One of my patients was dying of it, so I tried the medicine.
It worked?
Yes.
And you've used it only the once?
No, several times. And I've discovered something else.
Oh, what's that?
It works better if it's mixed with opium. The Ipecacuanha seems to help the stomach movements, and the opium soothes the patient. It's really remarkable.
Good, good. Carry on with the experiments. Take careful note and make sure that your doses are exact. You may have found something worthwhile. But, Thomas...
Yes, sir?
Please don't imagine that you found a cure-all. Believe me, there is not and never will be any such thing.
Eventually, Thomas Dover and Hans Sloane had learned all that Sydenham had to teach. Thomas Dover set up practice in Bristol, where he made a fortune treating the sailors with mercury. Hans Sloane remained in London, where he too found fame and fortune. In fact, as Sir Hans Sloane, he prepared the London Pharmacopoeia. Among the entries, along with spider's web, virgin's milk, and moss from human skulls, all of which are listed as approved treatments, there is an item, Dover's powder. This is given as 10% Ipecacuanha, 10% opium, and a filler of sulfate of potassium. So Thomas Dover had become famous as well as rich. He was settling into a comfortable and prosperous middle age when quite suddenly he felt the need for excitement and adventure. At this time, Bristol was a bustling seaport, filled to the brim with honest merchantmen and not quite so honest privateers. One of the most famous of these was Captain Woods Rogers.
Dr. Dover?
That's correct.
You wanted to see me?
If you're Captain Woods Rogers, yes.
That's me.
Good, good. Sit down. A glass of brandy?
Yeah, thank you.
There you are. Now, I understand your line of business is profitable.
Profitable and legal these days. I've got a license from the king. Saves unpleasantness, the chance of having your neck stretched in execution, Doc.
Well, to put it bluntly, you're a licensed pirate.
Well, we only attack the Spanish and the French, so it's all right.
Yes, of course. Now, seriously, I have some money, and so have some of my friends.
Would the Bishop of Bristol be one of them?
You're very well informed.
I keep my ears open.
Yes, well, these friends and I have got together, and we'd like to finance an expedition.
Yeah, it occurred to me you might. How many ships?
2 frigates.
Well, now, by a strange coincidence, there are 2 suitable vessels available at this very minute.
Then you're interested?
Yes.
Well, you buy the ships. Fit them up with everything you think you'll need for the voyage.
How long?
I beg your pardon?
How long are you counting on us being out?
As long as you need to make us all rich.
Probably a couple of years. Depends what we find, of course. You got that much to spare?
As much as you need and more. There is one other thing.
Yeah?
I want to go with you.
Well, that's not usual.
I know, but I'm tired of sitting here in Bristol. I want to get out, see something of the world, have some excitement and adventure.
You'll get that all right with me.
Then you'll take me as ship's doctor?
No.
But...
If you have money in the venture, I'd rather take you as second captain.
So it was that the amazing Dr. Dover left his comfortable life behind and set out to be a buccaneer. Dr. Dover had 2 frigates, one named the Duke and the other the Duchess. At that time, the main hunting ground for privateers was off the mainland of America, and it was there that the Duke and the Duchess headed. One day, they were watering near an Indian village on the coast of Mexico when they learned that a small Spanish treasure ship was lying at Veracruz and was due to sail for home at any time. The Duke immediately put to sea with the aim of intercepting the Spanish ship. On a grey morning, 5 days later, she came up over the horizon, a brig carrying 18 guns.
Here they come. At this moment, I always wish I had led a better life.
And most of the shot went high, right over the top.
Yes, I told you we were well within range.
And aren't you going to return their fire?
Yes, in a minute. We'll take our time. We've got 20 minutes before they can reload those guns.
But what about the guns on the other side? She can turn and fire those.
That clumsy creature. Turn? We'll be round in a quarter of the time. Open the gun, ports, men! We shall now come down on her defenseless side. Ready to fire!
Yes, sir.
Stand by! Fire!
Right amidships. You got them right in the middle.
Aye, now we'll swing round and come back with our other guns to bear.
What's happening?
Where?
On the deck, look. The men are all coming up. Do you think she's going to blow up?
I hope not. At this range, we could go too.
No, I don't think it's that. They'd be jumping into the water if they thought she was going up. Oh, they seem to be holding a meeting. The officers are shouting.
Great ones for talking, the Spanish.
There seems to be quite an argument going on.
I think we should use the other broadside just to help them make up their minds.
No, wait. I think there's a mutiny going on over there. Yes, look, that they're waving white cloths and the colors are being lowered.
What the devil's it all about?
Shall we lower a boat, Captain?
No, I don't trust them. Could be a trick. Take us within hailing distance and ask them what's going on.
Aye, aye, sir.
I've never seen anything like it. It's hardly touched. But yet they seem to want to surrender.
Hey, master.
Well, it looks like we've got our first treasure ship.
Yeah, it was almost too easy. Well, man, what was it?
Runaway gun, sir. One of our shots went through a gun port and probably running around down below there like a mad monkey in a cage. They want to know if we can help their wounded.
Yes, of course. Lower a boat. I'll go over.
Oh, I don't think you should.
We've got a whole treasure ship unharmed. I think I owe them any help we can give.
Dr. Dover found the gun deck a shambles. 2 men were beyond aid. Another lay helpless with a leg crushed. He seemed almost indifferent to his injury, dazed and uncaring. As the ship tossed on that choppy sea, the buccaneer doctor set briskly to work and removed the leg while the man lay making no movement or protest. During the next 6 months, they sailed up and down the American coast. They attacked Spanish and French ships and land settlements and began to amass the fortune upon which they'd set their hearts. Then came feared and dreaded signs. Scurvy.
Captain Rogers, we are going to have to put ashore. We must have fresh food.
Well, you know quite well we can't. This is all enemy territory.
Your men are sick, Captain.
It's only the scurvy. It's quite normal on a long voyage.
It may be normal to you, but I won't allow it to go unchecked on a ship of mine. Do you realize that we have 3 men dead, and most of the others are affected in one way or another? They've no spirit. They sit and shiver. The slightest thing set them in a state of terror. You'll never fight the Spanish with this lot.
Oh, what do you suggest?
I seem to remember from the chart that there are some uninhabited islands near here. I think we should put in at the next one we see what we can find in the way of fresh meat or fruit.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. We should come abreast of Juan Fernandez tomorrow afternoon.
Uninhabited?
Well, according to the charts.
Good. We'll put ashore.
It was late afternoon on January 21st when the two ships reached the island and dropped anchor.
Very well, Captain, here we are. Let's lower a boat and go ashore.
It's getting late. It'll be quite dark by the time we get the boat down. Now I think we should wait till morning.
You said it was uninhabited. What danger can there possibly be? Why not go now?
Captain, sir, look up on the hill there.
Huh? Where?
Halfway up, in a clearing.
Well, what is it?
A fire.
But you said the island was uninhabited.
Yeah. It's probably pirates. Well, that settles it. We don't land.
Perhaps not tonight, but I intend to land in the morning.
And I say we up anchor and go now.
Captain Rogers, I'm perfectly prepared to take your orders as far as sailing and fighting are concerned. But I would remind you of 2 things. First, I'm a doctor. And second, these ships belong to me. As far as the health of the men goes, I intend to give the orders. And I say that we go ashore tomorrow. That is, if you don't want a ghost crew in a few weeks' time.
Very well. You insist. On your own head, be it.
Don't worry, Captain. If I'm killed, I won't hold you responsible.
Next morning, Captain Rogers took the frigates in as close to shore as he dared. Dr. Dover called for volunteers to row the pinnace, and soon they were headed for the sandy beach of the island.
Well, it all looks peaceful enough.
Wonder what made that fire last night.
Perhaps it was a natural fire of some kind. I certainly didn't see any sign of pirates or Spaniards.
Well, we're ashore, sir. Can I give you a hand out?
Thank you. A beautiful place, isn't it?
Look, sir. There. Coming out of the trees.
What the devil is it?
It runs like a man, but it looks almost like a goat. It couldn't be the devil, could it, sir?
Oh, nonsense.
Well,
it's a man.
But his clothes, sir. Look at his clothes. They look like fur.
They are, don't you see? Goat skin.
Help me.
It almost sounds like English. But don't worry, we'll help you. You're all right.
Must have been shipwrecked.
Take me away. Do not leave. Take me, please, help.
Yeah, now, don't worry. We'll look after you. How long have we been here?
Long. Long.
When were you wrecked?
Not wrecked. Left.
It's all right. You're found. We won't leave you. When were you left here? What year?
For five.
And he's been here for 5 years. Poor devil. Wonder why they left him.
Oh, what's your name?
Selkirk. Alexander Selkirk.
Dr. Dover collected fresh fruit and killed some goats for meat, and carried them back to the ship together with his strange survivor. At first, Alexander Selkirk found difficulty in expressing himself after his 5 years of isolation. But soon, his speech grew more fluent. and he was able to tell of his ordeal.
I sailed with Captain Spradlin. I was his navigator.
That devil.
Yes. I knew he had a reputation for ill-treating his men, but I thought I could handle him.
The promise of a fortune in gold will take most men a long way.
It was the only thing that kept the men from mutiny. But the ship was a hulk, not fit to sail. When we reached this island, I tried to get the men to refuse to sail any further. But they wouldn't listen to me. Captain Stradlin heard about my talk to the men, and he said, if you want to stay, you shall. He put me in a long boat and had me rowed to shore. That was 5 years ago.
How did you keep from going mad?
Oh, I thought about my home in Scotland, of my family in Largs. That's a little fishing village in Fife.
Well, how did you live?
What, first? I ate shellfish and turtles when I could catch them. I couldn't accept what had happened, you see. So I sat there on the beach, waiting for them to come back. I was so full of despair that I couldn't even think. They had left me a few things, a Bible and a knife and gun. At length, for want of anything better to do, I opened the Bible and began to read. That was the turning point. Through that Bible, I came to terms with my fate. I learned that I mustn't live from day to day dreaming of rescue. I must accept what had happened and make the best of it. I built 2 huts. I learned to hunt the wild goats. I cooked the meat and used the skins for clothes.
But companionship, what about that?
Oh, at first, I thought I would die of loneliness. But then, I accepted that too. There are hundreds of wild cats on that island. I fed them and they grew tame. They would sleep on my bed, and I would read to them from the Bible and even sing hymns to them.
And you saw no humans in all that time?
One party of Spaniards. I hid from them. Tell me what happened to Captain Stradling.
His ship went aground in Spanish Colombia. He's a prisoner in Spain.
Oh, I'm sorry. At one time I would have been glad and hoped he suffered. Now I don't hate him anymore. I've found peace on my island.
But you don't want to stay here?
Oh, no, not now that rescue has been offered.
Well, you're welcome to join us. We've lost 3 men with scurvy.
Aye. How'd you like to be second mate on the Duke?
Oh, thank you, sir. I'd be obliged. You know, sir, this is almost like returning from the dead.
So, for the next 2 years, Alexander Selkirk sailed with Captain Woods Rogers and Dr. Dover. During that time, the privateers amassed a small fortune. And when the crew shares and expenses had been paid, they found there was left over £170,000, most of this money going to Dr. Dover. But Selkirk found it difficult to adapt after his long period of isolation, and apparently often regretted leaving Juan Fernandez with its tranquility and solitude. He died of yellow fever during an expedition to the Gold Coast and was buried at sea. He might very easily have been forgotten but for one thing. His story came to the ears of the writer Daniel Defoe. The author was 58 years old and plagued with ill health and debt when he wrote his immortal Robinson Crusoe. Yet the book, a cunning mixture of fact and fiction, is an inspiring example of a man's survival through his own ingenuity and faith. As for Dr. Dover, well, his famous powders remained for many years a remedy for stomach troubles. One strange fact was that the alkaloid emetine was isolated from Ipecacuanha in 1817, but it wasn't until 100 years later that it was found to be especially effective against amoebic dysentery. So, the amazing Dr. Dover was on the right lines all the time.
Medical File, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives.